David.
It's the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and it is April the 18th, and we are here today to talk to OHSU, and I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 5524. And Mr. Wilson?
First of all, Mr. Chair, I'd invite up the folks from OHSU, the president and the acting provost, and then just to make sure you understand, we will do public testimony for this section of HEX budget today, so in a few minutes I'll take a look at how many people signed up and then try to gauge how much time you have for your presentation.
Dr. Robertson, welcome.
Thank you, co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner. For the record, my name is Joe Robertson, president of OHSU, and I'm joined today by Dr. Elena Andreessen, who is the interim provost at OHSU. And we are both delighted and privileged to be here today. This gives us the opportunity to talk about what is certainly my favorite topic, and that is OHSU. Having been there for 38 years and on the faculty for 32, I actually really look forward to this opportunity to come down and share what we do with others.
A lot of people don't realize it's one of the largest employers in the state.
It is, and the numbers are still continuing to grow rather dramatically. I will give just a bit of a confession before we start. You have to remember we are academics. That means we're used to showing lots of slides, so we probably have too many slides. Good morning, Senator Roblin. Probably have too many slides. The slides are there just for discussion, okay? We want to make sure we answer your questions, but this is not a record. Back in the prehistoric days when I had, you know, dueling projectors, my record is 72 slides in 8 minutes. So we only have 83 for an hour. So we'll handle the slides. We also, you're always making late changes. The numbers on the pages are approximate, but they aren't more than one off. So with those caveats, I'll dive in.
Thanks. Next
slide. I think you've got, have I got the clicker? Okay. Well, this is actually my favorite slide. This puts it just right out there, and it reminds everybody why we're at OHSU and what we do. And, you know, I would remind everybody, too, that this is that OHSU is a university that was created in statute by this great body. And this is lifted directly from our strategic plan. And the key words, you can certainly read the statement, but the key words are underlined there. It's partner, we're going to innovate, we're going to work across our missions, and we're going to improve the health and well-being of Oregonians. And if you actually walk around OHSU, I think we're one of the few institutions that can actually tell you what we're there for and what we do. And people have internalized this. And I also want to add, what you don't see is national rankings or national stature listed in that. That doesn't mean that we aren't aspirational. We are very aspirational, but we want to gain recognition on a national level for what we are able to do for the citizens of the great state of Oregon. And we hope to be so successful that not only will we impact the lives here, but we will gain national recognition by the way in which we do it, and that we can provide leadership in that way for others.
And Joe, I've been telling people that OHSU is one of the top teaching hospitals in the world. Is that still accurate?
It's very accurate, and Dr. Andreessen has some statistics that will back that claim up. So, and this, if the first was my favorite slide, this, we go back one. We haven't quite coordinated here.
Sorry.
Oh, we got to. Okay,
Mr. Chair, just real briefly, the presentation. It's we've added it to the ongoing HEC presentation, so it's listed on OLIS on the 27th around, or somewhere around slide 450.
Thank you.
So This is a schematic of OHSU, and you may have heard for years there's been a slogan at OHSU that goes like this. It's where healing, teaching, and discovery come together. For many, many years, people thought of that in a geographic sense, and they said, well, that's what goes on Markham Hill, or the term I hate, Pill Hill. Okay, but we no longer look at it like that. For me, this Venn diagram is a functional diagram, and the magic of an academic health center is that you have all of those missions occurring concurrently. And when we are seeing patients, we are providing world-class care. We hope to be training the next generation of providers and collecting the data and analyzing it so that we are constantly improving, and that's research. And we think that's truly, it's that intersection of those disciplines that's the heart and soul of OHSU. And as you've heard, we use the word partnership a lot. Of course, fundamental to OHSU is our partnership with the state. And in a partnership, each of the partners brings important characteristics to the partnership, and we are very thankful that the state provides a flexible public corporation structure. Again, just to remind all of you, this was Senate Bill 2 in 1995. This enabling legislation that creates us as a public corporation is the envy of every public academic health center in the country. It is unequivocally the best enabling legislation in the country for an academic health center. And so, again, we owe our thanks to the wisdom of this body for having done that. You provide us with direct appropriation, and also we work together to bring down federal funds, and there have been very timely and strategic infusions of capital that have been to the benefit of OHSU and also a great benefit to the citizens that drawn and have also drawn in many extra capital dollars. And OHSU, in return, delivers world-class care. We train the next generation, as I said, biomedical innovation. And competence across all of our missions. One of the things I will mention here is that we are one of the largest employers. We're a tremendous economic engine for the state, but we don't like to overly concentrate on the fact that we're an economic engine because we feel it's secondary to what we do. Our goal is not to be an economic engine. It's a secondary outcome. If we fulfill our primary missions, we will become and continue to be a great economic engine. And here you see what great value is being provided by OHSU to the state, and this is across now over a 40-year period, and although there were some peaks and valleys, you will see that with relatively flat funding in the operating budget, we have continued to grow the number of employees and the number of students. And we have done that because we've been able to leverage federal dollars, philanthropy, and also grow the clinical enterprise. Oops, I'm not very good here. I skipped over a very important slide. Here is a slide that dives down into the details of the budget. I'm not going to go over every detail here, just a couple highlights. Again, I would say the reason this works is because of the way we're able to leverage other funding sources. And as a brief reminder, we do bring $100 million every year from the clinical enterprise over to support the academic missions of OHSU. And I would give a specific shout out to the showy line there, and just a reminder, this is the program that helps us recruit people with Oregon background and who are inclined and have stated and are willing to fulfill the commitment they make in that statement to being providers that serve underserved Oregonians. And again, Dr. Andreessen has additional comments. This is an update on the Knight Cancer Institute. If you have not seen it, you should have a letter in your inbox from Dr. Brian Druker and from me that outlines the progress to date. There were certain terms in the agreement that was signed at the time the legislation was passed into effect to provide the part of the match for the Knight Cancer Challenge, and I'm proud to say that those conditions are being met. They're outlined in the letter. This project is also on track, on budget. All the permits are in. We anticipate opening in approximately July of 18, and we have I think these are just some of the highlights, and I think it's interesting to note that this, the last line on this slide is not quite technically correct. It, actually, those 538 new employees have been added since the state made its commitment for the $200 million, because it was at that point we felt absolutely certain that the challenge would succeed, and we were confident in going ahead with the plans for the building and beginning to recruit people. So, again, thank you for that. Again, lots of information on the slide. I think I will just highlight the fact that there are extensive communities partnerships with Medi Communities at the Knight Cancer Institute. This is unique. In this past year, we have received notice that this summer, the Knight Cancer Institute will gain status as a comprehensive cancer center. That will put us in the same category as Mayo, Sloan Kettering, Fred Hutchinson, and others. We have for years been the only cancer center between Seattle and San Francisco, but now we will have the top category. And this community partnership, when we receive comprehensive status, that's where we go out and we give grants to communities so they can actually impact what things that can be done to prevent or treat cancer better in those communities. That was specifically singled out by NIH as an outstanding feature of our program and unique in the country. And now we will turn the slides over to Dr. Andreessen.
Welcome. Good morning. For the record, I'm Elena Andreessen, Interim Provost. It's really a pleasure to be here. You're going to have to forgive me. I spent my first 38 years in Seattle, if that's acceptable. So in our education overview, as with some of our other, this is part of the record. Please feel free to ask questions at any time. We have a lot of information on some of the slides, and I can stop and answer questions wherever you want. In the education overview, just a reminder of what the schools are at OHSU. We have a School of Medicine with a number of programs, School of Nursing with a number of programs, School of Dentistry. Our Joint School of Pharmacy is with Oregon State University, and our New School of Public Health is a joint venture between OHSU and PSU, leveraging 22 years of history in an accredited program into a nationally recognized School of Public Health. The state provides direct general support to the schools of dentistry, medicine, and nursing, and so we'll be providing some more detail on those programs specifically. For our education mission, overall, we have about 3,700 students, but you can see here the close to 2,900 students that are part of the three schools that have the state-supported programs in them. Our percent Oregonian, we have more details later, but has remained very high in terms of students who come from Oregon into our schools. We, in addition, have over 800 interns, residents, fellows, and so forth. We're a top-tier public healthcare university. We have a number of nationally recognized programs. We continue to have very strong applicant pools for all of our programs, and the student body continues to become more diverse, something that we'll talk briefly about in terms of how we've leveraged funding to bring more diversity into our programs with the President's Fund. The national recognition is always important, considering that people think of us as a smaller state. They apparently haven't looked at our geography. But U.S. News and World Reports shows very high rankings for some nationally recognized programs: family medicine, primary care in general, rural medicine, physician assistant program, nurse midwifery, and the nursing graduate program. And we've been ranked one out of 141 medical schools in the nation determination based on the social mission score of the university. So this is, all of these are accolades that are above and beyond what we know for the value of Oregon and are important to us. This is just a slide that has a fair amount of information on the applicant pool. On the left are data on all the applicants. On the right are the data about the Oregon applicants. So the total applicants to the School of Dentistry has gone up, but the number of Oregonians has decreased. We'll talk a little bit about the pipeline in a bit. The applications are up to the School of Medicine, and Oregonian applicants are also rising. But we think that, and overall, this calls for greater investment and commitment to STEAM or STEM, the pipeline. And you'll see some of the efforts that we've made on that in terms of investment in Oregon and bringing more Oregonians into our university.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much, both of you, for being here and for your presentation. We never hold it against people for having spent some time in Washington. I just wanted to ask...
California, maybe.
Well, I'm just trying to figure out, so, for example, 2016-17, so you had 1,294 applications in the School of Dentistry overall, and 76 people were admitted?
Yes.
And so 95 of the 1,294 were Oregonians?
Correct.
But 43 of the 76 were? Wow, I'm going to tell everybody I know who ever wants to go to medical school that they should move here first. I mean, that's if you look, that's like a tiny percentage of overall applicants, but it's like half of the Oregon applicants. So that clearly is a priority in the admissions, process.
Yes, and co-chair Smith Rowe and Smith Warner and Monroe.
We're just one person.
So as you look at that number, it's important that Oregon actually would not need as many dental students as we could train in a given year. But we do need to have a class of that size to provide what we think is the best training program. So, you know, people are always asking a lot of questions about non-resident students, but they're a very important part of the formula that makes the educational process work. And they are also an important source of diversity for our students. And we are very successful across all of our schools in bringing people from outside the state. And so all of our applicants are exceptional, but we have truly the people that are accepted from out of state are exceptional individuals. And then there is a very high likelihood that we will actually capture them to Oregon.
Thank you.
So I mentioned the President's Fund, and that's an impact on student diversity that is very important to us. We've been recruiting diverse students to OHSU by making them the place of choice for students. To date, we've had 54 students that have been brought in from different racial and ethnic groups into underrepresented health professions from rural environments or who have experienced significant disadvantage. Of these 54 students, 22 were MD students, 10 dentists, 13 physician assistant, and then 6 nursing and 3 graduate nursing. They're receiving full tuition and fee funding for the entire length of their program, making it possible for people who would not otherwise have been able to go into these programs. And probably most important, and coming out of the other end, we know that students have significant debt. The funding is anticipated to reduce indebtedness for these 54 students by more than $6.2 million when they are finished. This is another quick look. The nice thing is to notice the uptick at the end in terms of as this program has been rolling out, we've increased the proportion of race and ethnic diversity in our student who enter our programs. Some of the immediate challenges the cost of this education, the president just referred to the fact that we have to have a substantial class size in order to provide the best education possible. But above and beyond that, it's very expensive to produce the really high-quality education that we do, and it will continue to rise. And the student debt does influence selection of specialty and practice locations, and it disadvantages rural and underserved areas. The pipeline to keep really qualified Oregon applicants is struggling to keep up with increased workforce needs, and we're tackling this in a variety of ways. Tackling student debt, we have a tuition promise that's been a commitment to students when they enter that they'll have the same tuition throughout their program. We also have something that's novel that has caught national attention, which is from 2012, we have a certified financial planner who works with students in terms of their debt and management and day-to-day life. It's been extremely successful, and it's helping students a lot to manage how to go through both their education years and beyond. And we provide an additional $4.5 million annually to students in the form of scholarships generated through a variety of mechanisms. The tuition promise is important. Probably the most important figure is at the bottom that that this is probably going to have an impact on student debt by at least $2.2 million over the period of students entering from 2013 and 2014, some of whom are going to be beginning to graduate. Another challenge is provider distribution. And the president mentioned SHOEI. It was established in 2013 by the state of Oregon for two critical challenges, higher cost of tuition and the maldistribution of providers throughout the state. And research has always shown that students who are from a rural community are six times more likely to practice in a rural community. So training these important Oregonians is important to supplying also the health care of the state. So our preferences are for rural heritage, diverse or underrepresented communities, first-generation college, and from graduated from one of our four regional universities. SHOEI, we've had 61 students to date. They've been awarded full tuition and fee funding for the entire length of the program. They've come from throughout our state. The service commitment is anticipated from these students to result in a grand total of 237 years of practice in a rural or underserved community in Oregon by these students. The funding is anticipated to reduce their indebtedness by more than $7.6 million just for these students.
I was involved in, and this committee was involved in pursuing that approach back in 13 or whenever it was, and I'm always interested in how successful that is in terms of getting the rural areas, getting people to practice in the rural areas where there's a dearth of medical professionals. This helps us to understand, hopefully, that program does make a difference, putting aside a certain portion of a student's debt if they serve a certain number of years in a rural area, and then they may put roots down in that rural area and decide they want to live the rest of their life there.
Co-Chair Smith Warner and Monroe, that's exactly what we think this produces, and thank you for the support of this.
And Co-Chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, I can't help but chime in here. One of the reasons, the magic of this program, is that the students never go through the thought process of thinking that they will be burdened by the debt, that they are aware of this from the time that they are admitted, so they are never encumbered by the thought of finances limiting their ultimate specialty choice.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And what specifically is the commitment that they make to serve in the rural areas?
How many years?
So, Co-Chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, the commitment is for the number of years they train plus one. So it depends upon which program they're in. It's years of tuition, forgiveness plus one. Okay. Again, known from the time that they're accepted.
Great.
So we have examples of our showy students. Tanya Saito is a medical student. She grew up in Portland, went to school at the University of Oregon, her graduation in human physiology. She worked as a physical therapy, continued to work at the Mayo Clinic. She was in Lane County. She got her first taste of providing health care in a rural setting, found it inspirational, and is now in our program on medicine, and it has a desire to practice in a rural location. Sarah Kent is a nursing student. She's a native of Toledo, Oregon, and she and others in her community were active in starting and supporting a school-based clinic which served not only students but the community at large. She's a 2016 graduate of the School of Nursing, receiving a BSN as well as a master's in nursing with a specialty in nurse midwifery. She's currently working as a certified nurse midwife in Roseburg, Oregon. Kevin Vanderhoevel is a physician assistant student. He's a graduate of Western Washington State University, where he received his degree in disaster preparedness. He came into our physician assistant program in 2015, had an interest in working in a rural setting, and the faculty encouraged him to apply for financial assistance for the SHOEI program. He's halfway through the program, recently completed a rotation in Coos Bay as part of his rural campus initiative, and reports that he loved seeing his patients and fellow practitioners out in the community. He's looking forward to working full-time in rural Oregon and sees that as an extension of the physician assistant mission to extend care to places that can't support a doctor full-time. Extending our conversation about OHSU's statewide mission in education, we continue to deliver high-quality education for innovation over the years. We've launched a number of initiatives that are important to meeting that. I mentioned the Campus for Rural Health. Can talk a little bit more about that. The Consortium of Nursing Education has a good long history. OCNE, Interprofessional Education and Collaborative Practice initiatives are important to extending the kind of education that our students receive to work in care teams, and an initiative in simulation in terms of adding to the capacity of our education. And I'll spend a little bit of time on those. The rural campus is especially important. It's had a couple of years in terms of its launch. First launched in Klamath County in the South Coast. We expect it to continue moving in Northeast Oregon in 2017, located in La Grande in that area. We expect it to have most students rotating through a rural experience of substantial length. So far, it's educated over 120 students in four-week rotations or embedded for as much as 3 to 6 months. And it's engaged over 100 affiliated rural and frontier faculty and instructors, and created partnerships with 16 organizations, and trained quite a number of health professionals. The students address unique health disparities related to their discipline and partner with rural and frontier community organizations and faculty. They can see themselves practicing there as they have the experiences in the rural campuses and in those clinics. The OCNE is nationally recognized. It's a collaboration between 11 Oregon community colleges, 4 public universities, and OHSU. It offers the very respected bachelor's in nursing in 16 locations throughout Oregon. It helps to fill Oregon's nursing workforce gap, especially in rural areas, with over 4,000 graduates to date. Longevity in nursing education, innovation, and partnerships versus an independent silo approach really shows the effective use of state resources. It's also a cost-effective approach to expanding the capacity to deliver care in high-quality nursing and enabling the transferability of credits. It's a gateway also to advanced practice nursing.
Are some of those nurse practitioners?
The OCNE program directly is a Bachelor of Science in Nursing, but it is the gateway to advanced practice nursing, such as what you're talking about. So it is important to have that degree first before moving on.
Okay, because I know in rural areas, nurse practitioners are often the number one primary health provider.
Well, Co-Chair Smith Warner and Monroe, the nurse practitioner program is a very strong one at OHSU, and this is the gateway degree in order to enter those levels of education. We have a student profile for Marciela Kelly. She will graduate from Auconey and Blue Mountain Community College this summer. It's allowed her to practice her placement in her home community. She's going to be the first generation of college graduates from her family to receive a bachelor's degree. She was inspired to become a nurse when she delivered premature twins 11 weeks early and spent nearly 2 months in a neonatal intensive care unit, or her twins did. She's going to remain in Eastern Oregon after completing her degree and work locally in the community that she loves. The kind of thing that we're hoping continues with Auconey. Our interprofessional education also is an important component. Team-based collaborative care is more effective, and it provides safer care for patients, lower health care costs, and better outcomes for populations. Instead of our health professionals training only in their silos and disciplines, we ask them to also learn how to train in teams. So since 2012, the faculty and staff have worked for the clinical and community environments and also the delivery of team-based care and the education. We became an incubation site for the National Center for Interprofessional Education and have rolled out some programs as part of that. The practices in teams, and we educate in teams, and we have regional and national leadership in this. Simulation is another area that OHSU draws national attention to. In the spring of 2014, we had two new floors from the Collaborative Life Sciences building on the South Waterfront dedicated to simulation training, simulating things that actually occur both in things like surgery and with patients. The main focus of this is to train learners not only well in these areas, but also in teamwork, communication, and clinical skills. We also have a simulation and surgical training center in one of our older buildings on Markham Hill campus that works in invasive procedures and clinical anatomy. So this is a very large amount of space that's dedicated to simulation training. This partnership also helps to bring in providers back in for training and help support the teaching activities. Meeting the changing needs of the workforce, and we have new programs in healthcare, and this is one of the areas where partnership really helps. We are collaborating and exploring with Oregon Institute of Technology for a number of programs. That's an important collaboration that we expect to continue. We are increasing diversity. We're investing time and resource into increasing the diversity of faculty, staff, and students. We'll talk about a key hire that we've made in a few slides. This is in order to meet our flexible healthcare environments and the changing demographics of patients.
Mr. Chair, just to do a time check,
Wilson.
We have about 10 people signed up for public testimony. We probably should end about 9:25 to make sure they get their time, which means you have about 20 minutes.
All right, so let's say that I have five.
Well, you can come back.
You only need five. Thank you. Well, the educational key performance measures, or the KPMs, are important, but there's going to be a record for you to look back on. We have some numbered slides to show you how we're doing in terms of our targets and actual number of the proportion of nursing students that are Oregon residents, physician students, dental students. We tend to be above in many years the degrees and certificates that we've awarded. Degrees, we're good at degrees, and we've been tend to be above where we've targeted. And so we won't spend too much. I'll just let you look back on that. Our outreach is very important to us, and the outreach is important because we talked about needing to increase the diversity and the preparation of students coming into our programs at OHSU. And our outreach is one of the areas where we can highlight the community benefit contribution, which is about $269 million for 2015. We have a lot of outreach programs. Some of them are university-wide, and some of them are program-specific. The Oregon Poison Center, providing all of support for all of Oregon 24/7. Our Institute of Occupational Health Sciences to serve workers and employers throughout the state. Science education opportunities for internships and education. Preschool vision screening. Our Give Kids a Smile Day program, and our Area Health Education Centers, the AHEC, that provide rural and pipeline supports. I seem to be... a little bit off. This is all possible in terms of our multi-sector partnership. It's has everything from K-12 involved in our outreach to the industry, higher education, government, nonprofit community, in order to increase science education and opportunities. In funding success, we have a program called On Track, which is helping high school graduates pursue STEAM. And we received 5 grants totaling over $550,000, which helps leverage the other kinds of money that we receive. Students who will graduate from this program, about 80% are in STEAM education when they leave, and 51% are pursuing clinical. This is just a map to demonstrate that this is a statewide program, serves and brings students into considering STEAM throughout the state. Our AHEC is another one of our key programs in terms of the area health education system, with our a variety of centers located throughout the state. These education centers educate current and potential healthcare students in rural Oregon. Last year, we had 132 medical students completed at least one 5-week rotation, and some of them did 15-week rotations in rural locations as part of their education. We helped to support the training of 24 family medicine residents and have a variety of these sites. We've just gone back in for federal funding for this. Expect it to be very successful. The broad range of students includes 1,600 K-12 students who've been through the program. Our Office of Rural Health is another very key partner for getting us out into the community and bringing resources to the community and interests of students back in. It's an important effort supported by the state. It provides technical assistance around the state to providers and the health system. There's some charts that follow. We won't spend any time on them. We'll kind of go right through. But just as a reminder, this Thursday and Friday, the Office of Rural Health has a meeting on aging for the entire state. In Hood River, taking on an important topic for our state. So, student week served, education pipeline, federal funds, and so forth. Let's hit research. I'll try not to rush through it too far and still give some detail that will be useful. OHSU is a major driver in Oregon's bioscience industry, which has a total economic output of $10.3 billion in 2014. We're enormously successful, and it brings us a competitive advantage to bring people into the university and the science community that is at OHSU continues to bring people in. These are just examples from this last year or so in terms of our recruiting faculty. New director of the Vollem Institute, Sadek Eisner, came to lead up the early detection program for the Knight Cancer Institute. Our Center for Diversity and Inclusion brought Brian Gibbs on board. He's also a faculty member in public health. We brought a new chair in for physiology and pharmacology. Our founding dean joined us for the OHSU-PSU School of Public Health, David Bangsberg, and we have a new chair of behavioral neuroscience, Bita Mogadam. These are really important recruits, and we are able to leverage the kind of reputation that OHSU has had and what Oregon has to offer to bring people in.
And again, for the committee, when we funded the cancer challenge a few years ago, they told us that it would allow OHSU to attract some of the top research teachers in the world. It's happening.
Yes. Well, Co-Chair Smith Warner and Monroe, this is an extraordinary success for Oregon and OHSU. And as the president mentioned, we have reached the top level now of cancer research centers in the United States, which is quite important. The total sponsored research awards that we have continue to grow. You can see, in fact, in red where the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act helped us as well. This is in millions of dollars, an extraordinary achievement of the faculty. Research awards in Oregon, OHSU does lead in this regard. We are doing more active partnerships, and in fact, the president and I and others will be meeting later today with our colleagues from the University of Oregon and Monmouth in order to have a summit on science and research between our two universities. The economic impact of OHSU research, about 90% comes from out of state, and it adds to the economic benefit and strength of our state. It's not necessarily our principal goal, but it's an important benefit. and in fiscal year 2016, this multiplier effect that we calculate based on the new business new business multiplier effect, which is about 2.13 for every dollar, basically brings an additional $736 million to Oregon's economy. So the research has this other engine to it. While we say it's not one of our main reasons for existing, it is an important capacity that keeps bringing the students in and the faculty. Research does lead to new Oregon businesses. Since 1998, OHSU research has resulted in 60 startup companies and over 90 companies since the early 1970s. In 2016, OHSU research resulted in a record of 153 new inventions. So this continues to be an activity of OHSU and the faculty. I'm going to pass this back to the president.
Thank you. And although this is, I understand, the education subcommittee, okay, OHSU is a university that has a component of it, a very large health system. And again, trying to move through these slides rather quickly, stated very simply, this slide says that we're big and we're good. And I'm particularly proud here of the fact that you will see that the Dornbecker Children's Hospital ranks number one in the country in pediatric quality. And I think gives me the opportunity to mention, you know, the goal across all of OHSU is that Oregonians be able to be provided the care they need as close to home as possible. In some instances, that means with us working with various communities to increase the number of services that are provided there. In other instances, it means that we need to make sure that we, as the state's only major academic health center, have those services available so that citizens do not need to go outside the state to receive their care. Here are the, as we dive a little deeper into the details, this is some indication of the scope of the health system. This is, OHSU is the largest hospital in the state, and we are absolutely filled to more than capacity. It is a challenge for us. That is, working with others throughout the state, we are actually hopeful that we can actually enable other communities to serve patients, and even when they need to be hospitalized, actually, paradoxically, in hopes of reducing the number of admissions to OHSU. We have a very extensive program for training providers beyond their basic degrees. Dr. Andreessen mentioned some of those with the advanced practice nurse degrees, but also we have 811 residents. And what's little known is that there is federal funding for some of those, but for much of that funding now OHSU has to provide, because there are certain federal caps on the funding you can receive for and the last time I checked, we were at least about 200 residents or more over our cap. So that's literally now running into tens of millions of dollars that we provide to ensure that the state has workforce, and that training would not be available without this large comprehensive medical center. Another key aspect is that, and you can take for all we do in the clinical arena at OHSU, just across the board, about half of it's done in Portland and half of it's either from outside Portland, referred to Portland, or we are doing it out in the other regions of the state. This is a map that shows just some of our statewide practice sites. In the previous slide, you'll see a slide. I showed the number of patients seen on the Hill that was approaching a million. Here you see we're way over half that amount seen in a distributive manner, and we think those numbers will continue to increase in the coming years. We have partnerships across the state. We have ever-strengthening partnerships and becoming closer and closer to the communities that are mentioned there. This shows our reach is across the country, not only across the state, but for some of our specialty clinics, patients come from across the country. In fact, because of the amount of revenue that we bring in through research, philanthropy, grants, and patient care, many think that OHSU, with regard to the economic impact, should be considered more of a traded sector participant because of our reach beyond the state. And we do this, I hearken back here to one of the first slides that I showed that said OHSU will partner and will innovate and we will to improve the health and well-being of Oregonians. We do that everywhere. We work with communities, and we are an Oregon-based system, and we are committed to the health and well-being of Oregonians. There are, you know, this is an age of marked consolidation in the healthcare industry, and you will see national companies coming into many markets in many states. I often think that when that happens, those people from other areas don't, or with national headquarters in Nashville and such, don't necessarily have the same interest in the state as others.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Oh. President Robertson, your occupation health services, are they working on, this is an education committee, are they working with the Department of Education on lead poisoning? Are you providing any advice or support partnership in that area?
So, co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner, Representative Wisnett, I would like to get the exact facts and figures for that. We have a number of incredible toxicologists. I know that they have worked in that area in the past. I don't have the exact current information with me, but we would be happy to provide that to you.
Mr. Chair,
maybe provide it to the entire committee,
yes.
Please.
Maybe the HEC could work with them to do that, too.
We would be pleased to do that. I just don't want to be accurate in my portrayal of our efforts.
Okay. Thank you.
And we have an extensive telemedicine program. This will become ever more important. There are some providers that we will just never be able to place in rural Oregon, and so we are providing more and more services. We do this in multiple ways. We do this in emergency rooms. We do this to help treat patients who suffer strokes elsewhere. We staff with our pediatric intensivist, pediatric ICUs elsewhere. We provide psychiatric services in our in the prisons. So we also have contracts with all of the CCOs in Oregon, and we will be using telemedicine more and more to reach out. Very effective.
Representative Parrish.
Quick question on the telemedicine. I want to say it might have been like 2011 or 12. We did a diabetes pilot around telemedicine that I think you guys were involved with. That's something that you're still working on?
So co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and Representative Parrish, again, I OHSU is very large and complex, and I don't remember the details of all the programs. Our telemedicine program has grown extensively. Again, we would be happy to get you that information. And running short on time, but not wanting to shortchange a couple of very important activities at OHSU. One of those is the Poison Center. This is a unique service provided by OHSU to help individuals deal with these accidental poisonings at home as much as possible and giving life-saving information as quickly as possible. And this just shows through a KPM that we have been very effective in doing so. And this is a national accredited poison center, very important resource for this. And that was Mr. Yuck, by the way, if you want to know, the green figure on the sticker there. Okay. And the other center at OHSU that I want to give a special shout out to is what we call the CDRC, okay, the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. And this just as the Poisons Center provides special services urgently, this provides special services chronically. There is an incredible and increasing population of individuals across the state with special needs, and the CDRC is both the means and the place where those needs can be met. And we have people here to give testimony that will speak to this on a very personal basis and what it means. And ultimately, these are services that are very personal. Sometimes OHSU is the only place in the state where these are provided. In other instances, OHSU is the means by which these services are distributed throughout the state to those who would otherwise be unable to receive them. And I'm running very short, again, demonstrating we're fulfilling our mission. I guess no presentation to the Ways and Means Committee would be complete without talking about the money. So we will wrap it up with that. And this slide, I think, is just an overall look at our budget. I think the key thing to see on this slide is how well that yellow sliver is leveraged. I think that's the point we want to make. That's our starting point, and that yellow sliver is the building block upon which everything else is built. Whoops, didn't mean to do that. And this specifically drills down and shows that the state appropriation provides somewhat more than a quarter for our educational programs. This is a slide that is way too busy and way too complex, but the red line going up showing that there's more students. If you take the blue is the operating budget, the other color there, the sort of brown, is the capital budget. And so for an approximately roughly the same equivalent number of dollars across over a 20-year period, you see how more and more students have been trained. These capital dollars have been leveraged in many ways, not just in education, and we have continued to more highly leverage the operating dollars that go directly into the educational budget. And we have worked hard to improve our bond rating. That helps us in many ways and helps us reduce our capital expense by reducing our interest. To do that, we've had to improve our debt service ratios. This number looks good, and it's not bad, but it's still probably the weakest number in our bond rating analysis. But we've made substantial progress. This, again, is a slide that harkens back to what I mentioned about OHSU being an economic engine. We are very proud of this, but again, I would remind everybody this is a secondary effect. This is a result of us being able to do our job well and the result of us being able to leverage that $100 million of the health system into the academic enterprise. While I'm always an optimist, I'm also somewhat of a pragmatist and realist, and there are potential changes out there at the federal level on the horizon that if they impacted that healthcare enterprise, could significantly impact our ability to leverage the dollars and continue to be an economic engine in this manner. And these are the These are concepts for budget cut scenarios. I hope they remain nothing more than concepts. They are there for your perusal. I would rather end on a more optimistic note and just thank you again for your support and give you the reassurance that OHSU will continue to leverage the dollars for the state in an effort to improve the health and well-being of Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. We really appreciate it. And good job stealing Elena from Seattle. Yes,
Senator being Roper. A Husky, I'm not sure. That, as well as a duck, you know, I got to cover all bases. But no, it's really great to have you here, and thank you for your presentations.
Okay, we're going to take some public testimony now. Joel,
no, save Joel,
Aaron Papode, Joel.
Snowdy, maybe?
Snowdy. And Michael Smith.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
For purposes of the record.
Please keep your testimony to about 2 minutes.
Yes, we'll do. Thank you. For purposes of the record, my name is Aaron Panod. I'm testifying this morning as a resident of Multnomah County. I've provided my testimony in written format to the committee assistant that can be distributed to you as well and added to the public record. So, co-chairs Monroe and Smith Warner and members of the committee, I'm thankful to have the opportunity to share with you today my experience receiving services from the Hemophilia Treatment Center at Oregon Health and Science University, a program of the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center. While I do not personally have a bleeding disorder, my son Lewis was born in 2011 with a severe factor IX deficiency, commonly referred to as hemophilia B. When my wife and I found out we were expecting our first child in late 2010, we were excited to be growing our family and everything that comes with that experience. While the news was certainly cause for celebration, it also served as a catalyst for uncertainty and anxiety as my wife has a family history of hemophilia and had been identified as a genetic carrier for the condition after participating in a research study earlier in her life. Were we to deliver a baby boy, there would be a 50% chance that he would be born with hemophilia. After finding out we were indeed having a boy, we proactively contacted the Hemophilia Treatment Center at OHSU. The staff and clinicians helped educate us on what life might look like for us should our son have hemophilia, and were extremely supportive of us as we dealt with the emotions that followed. Perhaps most importantly, the team worked with our obstetrician and health plan to ensure a safe delivery and facilitate cord blood testing to learn if Lewis did in fact have hemophilia. We felt very fortunate to live in a community where we had access to this type of service and support, all provided before we knew that our child had hemophilia. We learned the day after Lewis was born that he did, in fact, have hemophilia. From that day forward, the Hemophilia Treatment Center became a regular part of our life. Early on, when Lewis was an infant, this meant an annual visit and frequent phone calls to the nursing staff for signs and symptoms related to possible bleeding. As first-time parents and parents of a son with a bleeding disorder, every first, whether it was crawling, climbing, or walking, was joyous and terrifying at the same time. As he grew older and became more active, our annual visits turned into weekly visits as we began to proactively treat his hemophilia by infusing medication intravenously, allowing his blood to clot to prevent serious bleeding. As you can imagine, inserting a needle into the vein of a toddler can be both physically and emotionally challenging. The Hemophilia Treatment Center staff exhibited expertise and calm during these appointments, ensuring that our son could receive his infusions. While the staff was extremely helpful and successful with our weekly infusions at OHSU, we shared a mutual goal of getting to a point where my wife and I could independently treat and manage Lewis's disease. After over a year of weekly venous infusions that were proving difficult, even by the most skilled nursing staff, the Hemophilia Treatment Center staff provided options that might lead to an easier infusion experience. We ultimately decided to have a subdermal port implanted in Lewis's chest that would provide easy access to administer his weekly medication. It was a difficult decision for us to make. However, the staff of the Hemophilia Treatment Center once again helped educate us on the different options that were available, ultimately helping guide us into the treatment strategy that was right for our family. They connected us with other families with similar experiences, answered countless questions, and calmed our fears. We were thankful to have the support of the treatment center team in a decision that was ultimately ours to make, but we felt much more prepared to make given our relationship with the center. Lewis will turn 6 years old this coming August, and our visits to the Hemophilia Treatment Center have returned to being annual visits and checkups. My wife and I have been trained by the treatment center team to administer his medication on our own at our home, which has given us flexibility, confidence, and ultimately independence in caring for our son. In addition, the Hemophilia Treatment Center has provided us comprehensive care and support. They provided live education to his daycare provider in school, kept us involved and appraised of important research related to hemophilia, and have connected us to other families just like us. The treatment center has become an invaluable part of our family. We're fortunate to have the treatment center at OHSU. While we're no longer completely dependent on them to help care for our child, knowing that there is a team available to help and support us as Lewis grows older provides us with valuable peace of mind as parents. Thank you for continuing to support the programs of the CDRC at OHSU, including the Hemophilia Treatment Center. Your decisions have a direct impact on parents and children living within Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Go ahead.
I'll wait with Mike.
All right. Co-Chair Smith Warner and Moreau, members of the committee, my name is Mike Smith, and I come before you as a private citizen living in Corvallis. I thank you for the opportunity to testify about how OHSU's Child Development and Rehabilitation Center has helped my family. In particular, I want to tell you about the excellence of our Hemophilia Treatment Center. My three teenage children and I had von Willebrand's disease, an inherited bleeding disorder that inhibits our ability to form and sustain clots when we suffer an injury. My son was first diagnosed with severe von Willebrand's as an infant. We lived in the state of South Carolina at the time, and we did not have access to the specialized knowledge and resources of a hemophilia treatment center. We were assigned a hematologist from an oncology center, but learned very little of our disease and its treatments. Every bump, bruise, and sprain left us anxious and uncertain. We were told that uncontrolled bleeding could have crippling and life-threatening consequences, and we paid frequent visits to emergency rooms. My career brought us to Oregon 4 years ago, and we learned immediately how helpful our Hemophilia Treatment Center could be. We had been in our house just 4 days when my son, 11 at the time, broke his arm racing newfound friends on his scooter. Our local emergency room helped with the fracture, but to prevent serious complications, we needed the help of a pediatric hematologist, and that's exactly what we got when we got on the phone with CDRC's Hemophilia Treatment Center. Expert treatment advice that day ensured any bleeding from the injury was controlled, and a visit was arranged the very next day to the HTC clinic in Dornbecker. That began our relationship with the awesome staff of doctors, nurses, social workers, and therapists with CDRC's Hemophilia Treatment Center. We now feel in control, and we no longer are in fear of our von Willebrand's disease. CDRC's Hemophilia Treatment Center staff helped all three of my children to learn the vital skill of self-infusing with the von Willebrand factor they need to control bleeding. All three of my teens are active student athletes, enthusiastic competitors in running, swimming, and Irish dance. Even those low-impact sports come with injuries. But CDRC's Hemophilia Treatment Center staff have empowered us to confidently diagnose and treat minor bumps and sprains. In fact, this very morning, that same son and I got up extra early to self-infuse to treat an ankle injury he suffered yesterday at track practice. I'm happy to say that I cannot remember the last time we had to visit an emergency room. I don't miss the anxiety, the hours lost waiting, and I certainly don't miss the expense. With no cure in sight, von Willebrand's is a disease my teens and I will have all our lives. But thanks to OHSU's Child Development Center, Child Development and Rehabilitation Center, I am confident their lives will be long, active, and healthy. We have an excellent hemophilia treatment center here in Oregon. Thank you again for this opportunity to help you understand the difference our treatment center has made in the lives of my family.
Thank you for your testimony, and welcome to Oregon.
Thank you.
Did we have a Joe Esmond?
Esmond.
Yeah. And Lori Swain and a Kevin Vanderheuvel.
I think there's only two. Go ahead. Chairs.
There's only two chairs? Oh, well.
There's two there.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Here comes another chair.
Senator Monroe, Robert Smith Warner, members of the committee. My name is Joe Esmond, and I'm speaking here as a private citizen. I just retired from the IBEW, Local 48 in Portland, Oregon. I'm the proud father of a surgical resident at OHSU. I have a college degree. I have a 5-year apprenticeship, so I know something about school teaching. This is way beyond me as far as the science stuff, but every time we talk, which is rare because they work in a lot of hours, and it's amazing what he's been doing up there. He's got a few more years to go. He did a rotation in Heppner, where he was introduced to cowboys and horses and alcohol. Had to sew somebody up one night. So I can't say enough about what they have down there. On the construction side and diversity, many years ago, South Waterfront Development, some of you may know, they were big partners with us, with the building trades, mandated diverse workforce percentages for minorities and women. I also like the fact that they produce family wage jobs around the state, and that's something that you don't hear much about. So, yes, I'm a shill for the hospital, but over the years, our unions have raised probably about $3 million for the Dornbecker's Center for Children. So with that, I will be quiet.
Thank you very much. Lori?
Good morning. My name is Lori Swain, and I am here as a graduate of the bachelor's program in nursing from OHSU and the master's program in nursing and soon to be the doctoral program in nursing at OHSU. I am a recipient of the Scholars for Healthy Oregon scholarship. On that really crazy busy slide, it was a teeny tiny little pink box, but I'm here to say thank you for that. Right now I'm a certified nurse midwife. I work at Legacy Silverton Medical Center. I've been working there since August. In June, I graduated with my master's. July, I sat boards, got my license. In August, I started working. And so I've been serving, I'm 8 months into my service commitment with the Scholars for a Healthy Oregon program. And like was mentioned earlier, that scholarship just provided so much stress relief to my family as I was going through the program. A little bit about me. My roots are in southern Ohio, rural Ohio. And so growing up, my family was fortunate enough to have health insurance, but I saw firsthand the difference that access to quality health care and maternity care can have on the trajectory of a life. I got married, we had babies, and for a few years I stayed home and cared for 3 tiny humans. When my girls were older, and we found our heartland here in Oregon, my interest in women's health and maternity care just continued to grow. I began to seek out more training and experience in order to improve the quality of maternity care in my community. So first I started out teaching childbirth education in my living room. And that wasn't enough, so I got more training and experience and became a doula, which is a labor support person, so providing emotional and physical support to families during their experience of labor and childbirth. That wasn't enough, and soon I found myself enrolled at Chemeketa taking prerequisites for nursing school, and I learned that the only nurse midwifery program in the state of Oregon happens to be our nation's top program, so I studied harder. I was admitted into the program, and then in 2014, I was awarded the Shoei Scholarship. Having to take out loans to get through the first part of the nursing program, that was an incredible relief to my family, as I had to stop working in order to go back to school. So last June, I graduated with my master's and started working at Legacy Silverton. And like I said, I'm part of the first cohort and have already started serving the rural and underserved communities in Oregon. At Silverton Hospital, we're one of the state's designated rural hospitals, and we care for women and families from all over Marion County. We have served families from Woodburn, Malala, Mill City, Scotts Mills, Silverton, as well as Northeast Salem. And so we get quite a diverse group in our patients, and I love that. About 20% of our patients are Spanish-speaking, which is pretty consistent with the population in Marion County. And as a bilingual provider, it's fabulous to be able to care for people in their native language. And now, because of Shoei, I'm a certified nurse midwife. I get to serve my neighbors in Marion County, and I get to work to improve the quality of maternity care, in starting with our patients, one family at a time. I love the team that I get to work with. We have an incredible midwifery and OB team serving our community in Silverton Hospital. And I love that I get to provide individualized, person-centered, patient-centered care, respectful to all that we serve. As a new grad, I'm really fortunate to have landed a job where I feel like I could stay for years. So thank you so much for helping to make that possible, and please do your best to keep that tiny little pink square going.
Thank you. Kevin, go ahead.
Hey, so my name is Kevin Van Hoobel, and I'm a second-year physician assistant student through the OHSU School of Medicine. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak about the Scholars for a Healthy Oregon Initiative, or SHOEI, and how important and vital this funding is. First, I want to start by saying that the SHOEI has made a difference in my life and students like myself who wish to practice medicine for underserved populations. When contemplating my career path in medicine, I decided early on to find a way to deliver health care to those that needed most. Looking at Oregon and its underserved communities, it became clear that so many of these communities were in rural and frontier parts of the state, away from resource-heavy urban centers like Portland, Eugene, and Salem. Having Shoei has allowed me to make this dream a reality. The scholarship is so much more than a financial incentive for students. It opens doors to resources. With the scholarship, I had the vast resources of the Office of Rural Health, who connect me with clinics and hospitals all across the state. More importantly, the office helped me understand the barriers to rural health care and really appreciate the unequal distribution of resources in Oregon. To complement the Shoei, as part of my clinical experience, OHSU provided me with almost entirely clinical rural rotations. Coos Bay, Heppner, Enterprise, Madras, Prineville, Bandon, the list goes on. Thanks to the Shoei Scholarship, my entire graduate education has been about connecting me with the needs of rural Oregon. And this is critical. This is critical for our future providers, and it's critical to the Oregon communities that we are all entrusted to and serve. On a systems level, Shoei represents one of the best rates of return the state could ask for. By investing in the Shoei program, recipients may continue to work in rural communities beyond their mandatory service agreement, so in my case, 3 years. Shoei gives students exposure to people, places, stories, and histories of these rural communities that ultimately fosters respect for that community, allows them to build roots in that community. And for many of us, create a meaningful experience that will inspire us to stay in rural Oregon. And if providers stay long-term in rural Oregon, we can directly combat healthcare inequality. Ultimately, the SHUI scholarship is vital to Oregon's health system. It breaks down financial barriers for students who want to practice in rural communities. It gives them the resources and education they need to succeed in these towns. And it helps fight the unequal distribution of healthcare resources on a state level. Right now, there are providers who are positioned in underserved communities thanks to SHUI. They're providing better access, higher levels of care, and building roots in places we never would have dreamed of if it wasn't for this scholarship. Thank you.
See, we did good.
Tysa Judd and Paul Lamoureux.
Excellent job on the pronunciation.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Co-chairs Monroe, Smith Warner, members of the committee. My name is Paul Lamoureux. I've been an Oregon resident for a long time. I've done all my schooling here. I went K through 12 in Josephine County, went to Rogue Community College. I got an arts degree from Southern Oregon University, went back and got a science degree from University of Oregon. Go Ducks. And now I'm at OHSU in my second year of dental school. And when I graduate, I'm going to go work in Grants Pass, Oregon, and I'll have about $350,000 of student loan debt to pay down. And when I think about it, it's kind of scary, it's kind of daunting, but I look back and it's really something I feel that's it's been worth it. When I applied to dental school, the only school I applied to is OHSU, because OHSU has a reputation of graduating really, really good clinicians. And more than anything, that's what I want to be, is a good dentist. So I figured that OHSU was the place for me. And I know that we're on a time frame, so in the interest of brevity, just some things that I find really great and things I'm proud about of my school is, one, our curriculum. We keep it very, very up to date. We're constantly bringing in new training and new technology so that when we graduate, we're practice ready. It's not that we're learning old things. We're learning all the cutting edge stuff, and that's very important to me. We also get exposure to patient care almost right from day one. We're working with patients, we're doing assisting, and our responsibilities as we go through the curriculum keep increasing until in our third and fourth years we're actually acting as the dentist. And that's also very important because dentistry isn't something that, you know, you can just pick up a textbook and learn. We have to get out there with the people. And lastly, OHSU gives us just a wonderful opportunity to go to places all over Oregon and work in clinics. Tyson and myself are part of the class of 2019, and we'll spend over 2 months on external rotation. We'll go to places like Coos Bay, Klamath Falls, Ontario, Burns. We're even going to go to this tiny little place called Portland, Oregon, and work in clinics such as Russell Street and Virginia Garcia. And these are areas that are, you know, either underserved because they're rural or, you know, just not underserved because of poverty. And it gives us a chance not only to, you know, hone our clinical skills and work in a real practice setting, but it also gives us a chance to improve, you know, Oregon's public health. And that's something that I think is very noble, and it's something I'm very proud to have as part of our curriculum. So I thank you guys for listening to me today. And if you could do me just the tiniest favor, please remember to floss.
Co-chairs Smith Warner and Monroe, members of the committee, my name is Tysa Judd, and I am not an Oregon resident simply because I hail from Montana. But Montana, unlike Oregon, does not have the excellent dental school OHSU. So I find myself residing here, and because I married a North Carolina boy, I am hoping to stay here and work and serve in rural Oregon. I've been a hygienist for over 10 years now, and working around the state of Montana, I found that actually connecting with people and making a difference in their lives when you're sitting and working in a very intimate area like the mouth, you can have immense changes. And I had other options, but I chose OHSU because it is an excellent school. And I worked with clinicians that graduated from there, and I was constantly impressed at their skill set, their ability to get out and actually succeed in dentistry at a level of excellence that was unmatched by several other institutions. While being at OHSU, I have also seen that, and I constantly am impressed at their dedication to maintaining older methods like gold work. We are still taught that and that excellence, but we're also taught the new cutting edge CAD-CAM. We have one of the best CAD-CAM courses that other schools don't even get experience with. So it's been absolutely astounding. And as we proceed into patient care, our patients are just a vital part. So being able to go out and serve those rural areas, we're constantly working with the dean to improve our access. His goal is to have eventually the fourth year all be external rotations. And part of that is you supporting us and helping us to achieve those things. So to keep things short, I just want to thank you all and echo Paul, don't forget to floss.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, congratulations on the decision to marry a good North Carolina man.
Final panel, Elizabeth Ramley, Laura DeHill, and Courtney Dressen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Courtney Dresser for the Oregon Medical Association. Here to support OHSU's proposed budget for the School of Medicine, Office of Rural Health, and the Area Health Education Centers at OHSU. OHSU is a good sponsor to the OMA, and we work in partnership on many things. I wanted to just highlight a couple of things. First, at OMA we have...
Courtney?
Yes?
I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. We're out of time, and you're always around here in the Capitol.
Sorry.
So we'll get you, we'll plug you in some other day this week.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Sorry.
That's okay. Sorry to have to be here every day.
Co-chairs, Monroe and co-chair Smith-Warner and representative of this committee. My name is Laura DeHill, and I am a parent from Eugene, Oregon, who benefited greatly from the Child Development Rehabilitation Clinic in Eugene. And I wanted to briefly share my family's story. So on Valentine's Day 2008, we took one of our twin boys in for an evaluation by a multidisciplinary team at CDRC. After a long day of appointments with a pediatric development specialist, an occupational therapist, a speech and language pathologist, a psychologist, and a clinical social worker, our son Ethan was diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. To say we were devastated is an understatement. I remember my husband and I both crying at the time of the diagnosis and several weeks thereafter. I can distinctly remember wanting to pack up and take my son to a deserted island so I could protect him from the world. On February 15th, the day after the diagnosis, I received a call from the pediatric development specialist who is part of the team who diagnosed our son. He called to check in to see how we were faring. And at the time, I had so many questions, but I couldn't even talk to him because I was crying too hard and just couldn't even compose myself. And he was very supportive and told me to call him back as soon as I was able to talk. And certainly, he didn't have to call me the following day, but I think it speaks highly to the caliber of the professionals working with OHSU. Undoubtedly, the people who evaluated my son that day had a very hard job to do. But looking back, my husband and I are very grateful for CDRC. We have no more wondering or second-guessing or running more tests. We finally had a diagnosis from which we could move forward and put tools in our parenting tool belt and get our son access to early intervention, which is so critical in the early years while the brain still has neuroplasticity. We were very fortunate we could access CDRC in our own backyard rather than travel 2 hours to Portland. I don't know how much you know about two-year-olds, but a two-hour drive to Portland, a six-hour evaluation, and then a two-hour drive home would have seemed daunting. We most definitely would have exceeded our window for pleasantries. Today, our son is a happy, thriving sixth-grade student who's reading, playing the trombone in his middle school band, and he loves hanging out with his friends. No doubt our journey is full of peaks and valleys, but I feel blessed to be able to still see and consult with the pediatric development specialist at CDRC who diagnosed Ethan 9 years ago. He helps make our journey a bit less bumpy for my family and more than the 8,000 other families in Eugene who benefit from the CDRC. On behalf of my family and others who access quality child development specialists, please continue to fund these services. They're critical to families in rural areas as well as highly populated metropolises, and they're critical to helping families just like ours. Thank you for allowing me to share my story.
Thank you so much for coming up. We appreciate it. We're going to have to wrap things up today because a lot of us have people waiting in our offices and so on, which is what happens this time of day. But this has been very enlightening. I want to thank all of you. And we will close the public hearing on 5524, and we're adjourned.